Keeping the Republic. Will the governor's book produce change? Mitt Romney in Indianapolis. Might our May primary count? The latest in the race for mayor, Joe Hogsett seeks a high profile, and the Supreme Court revisits a controversial case. That plus Super Bowl volunteers and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 23, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Governor Mitch Daniels is on a book tour, doing talk shows and public appearances in the effort to sell his solution for America's money woes. Daniels sat down with CBS White House correspondent Nora O'Donnell to kick it off. He talked about America, making tough choices, and other topics from his book, Keeping the Republic. He said he wrote the book because he was alarmed about the country. His assessment is that America is on the brink of becoming a failed nation.
I read this book and I was scared. Is that what you meant it to do, to scare people?
For the country?
Yeah.
Yes. People ought to be scared. If we don't make changes, we will ruin the American project. And by that I mean that the dream that has attracted millions to these shores, that a person can start with nothing and rise to the top.
Will the Daniels book have a bearing on the 2012 race for president? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is Daniels being treated like a candidate as he shops this book?
Look, I mean, he's clearly a candidate for something. But, you know, I think it's ironic that he wants to scare people, and I think people are scared. I mean, he's obviously auditioning to be the Cheney for the next dumb-witted governor of Texas. And it is frightening. It's particularly frightening when you look at the record that he wants to run on. You pick up the Indianapolis Star today, and you look at the fact that the median income has declined for the third straight year, not just because of the national recession, but relative to the other states. And if you recall, when he ran in 2004, he said the single measure of success or failure for his governorship would be an increase in that median income. So he's failed. It's not surprising, since he's had a war on the middle class, outsourcing jobs with benefits and attacking unions. So it's not surprising. And scary, it is.
Well, it's interesting. He's getting a lot of credit for what he did with state government finances. And yet, in terms of jobs creation and income and the poverty level, things aren't as good as they could be.
AAA bond rating. Indiana's finances are better than any state in the United States at this point. And that's because of his leadership.
State government,
absolutely. And we're situated to be ready for growth when the economy does turn around, when we're out of this recession. I mean, I think most Hoosiers would tell you that this guy may be the best governor they've had in the last 100 years in the state. He's very popular here. Well, yes, you can laugh all you want, because he's probably dominated Indiana politics for 8 years because of his leadership and his agenda. And this book is important. It's important. I think it will have an effect. That was your original question, I think.
Right.
I think it is important because he will be vetted by every serious candidate for president as a potential vice president. And if they read the book at all and get the ideas that are in there, as George Will calls it, conservatism for grown-ups, and I think that's what this is. It's an important book, and I think it is going to make a difference.
So he's doing everything from appearances with the governor of New Jersey to the Daily Show to cable shows, some news, some not. He's being treated like a candidate.
Oh, he's being treated, I think, with a lot of deference, and certainly a lot of attention has been shining on him. But, you know, he's got to love this, because here's a guy who is, by all accounts, a policy wonk. He loves talking about these ideas, and like most people who like talking about their ideas, especially elected officials, it's great when they have a forum or an arena in which they can do that. So to be able to voice these opinions and talk about what he's done on a national stage and maybe even affect in some way, perhaps a fundamental way, the GOP presidential nomination process without having to go through the downside of the limelight, the invasion of privacy that ostensibly kept him out of the presidential contest himself. It's the best of both worlds. So how would he not like it?
Ann thinks he wants to be a candidate. I think he wants to be relevant. Can he be relevant without being a candidate?
Oh, I think so. I think that's absolutely the case. I think you're seeing some of that now. I think he's being treated this way because he's an author and he's got ideas that I think people are paying attention to. Look, you can spin the record. We've heard both sides of that record, and you can reach your own conclusions. But one thing in the book that he makes a good case for, and that is we need action. We need to have forceful response to the economic circumstance and to all the problems that we've got in the United States and around the world. And in order to address that in a useful and meaningful fashion, we need to get to it. And anything that he can do to help break the logjam is a positive thing.
And you know what?
Well,
you answered
that. He's going to have to talk to the Tea Party people elected in Washington, because that's what the logjam is, and that's his own party. And you know, you can say what you want about the record of fiscal responsibility here. That's great, okay? But the fact of the matter is, he said the single most important factor. It is good.
Thank you.
But the single most important factor by which he said success or failure is judged. He failed.
No, well, but you're just so off.
Tell me this, though. Isn't part of the lesson here, though, that he did cut government spending and things like spending to schools, and that when you do that, you have social effects,
right,
and that he's asking people to look at what's going on with government and not necessarily what's going on in society?
Effects.
Because he's cut government because he had to cut government, and he's done it, which is exactly what America has to do. And we cannot keep going down this path that we're going on right now where we're just trying to spend our way out of this. It's not going to work. We're only going to bury ourselves, and it is going to be the end of this country as we know it if we keep doing this. And he's trying to bring some adult supervision to this thing, and I think it's going to be very important. This book is going to end up being a very important book.
So you're saying that median income and poverty rates are something we just have to deal with,
huh? It's going to come back. It's going to come back in when the economy comes back.
Oh,
and when it starts
in our lifetimes?
Yes, in our
lifetimes. Not when the Tea Party is controlling
Washington. Yes, in our lifetime.
John, part of what he does say in the book, and he's not advocating anything radical here, but he's saying, look, you can't take options off the table, and that's something that is very markedly different than what we're hearing from the Tea Party and others in Washington.
He's not ruling out higher taxes.
And that is a responsible
right.
approach.
That
you cannot tie your hands and try to attack this problem.
It's
not saying that you have to go out and raise taxes all over the place, but you need to keep that option open. And that's just a fact.
And as far as the relevance question, we spent 10 minutes talking about trying to answer your question. It was answered before it even started. The fact that this is a topic that he was on The Daily Show, that it was on every... I think show Fox had this week. He was on CBS.
What you're saying is if it was on Indiana Weekend Review,
we spent 9 years talking about his agenda.
But my point is he is relevant, and you're going to see not only because of the policy questions, but you're going to see the Republican presidential candidates come into Indiana to curry favor and try to get his blessing. So I'm saying he is – I don't think you would disagree. I think he's very relevant to the discussion.
Well, here's one who's come to town when he's out of town. Mitt Romney is in Indianapolis tonight in response to an invitation from state GOP chairman Eric Holcomb. Romney will address Republicans at the JW Marriott and attend fundraisers there. His visit follows similar appearances here by Herman Cain and John Huntsman. Rick Perry has now committed to make an Indiana visit too. Mike McDaniel, do these visits fall in the category of a quick money pickup? Or are these guys thinking about the Indiana primary and what happens here in May?
Well, first of all, I give Eric Holcomb credit for inviting all the presidential candidates to come to Indiana. And they are. And they're doing it, and I think, because they realize that this thing is still up for grabs. And Indiana very well could be an important primary before this is over. I still think this could be undecided before we get to the convention. in Tampa.
And that would guarantee that Indiana
and
would
be if it is still open by the time we get to convention, I'm looking into whether or not we can draft Mitch Daniels from the floor of the convention. I'm serious.
Have you talked to Sherry?
I've not talked to Sherry, and I probably won't be on her Christmas card list because of saying that. But I'm just telling you, this thing could still be open by the time we get to Tampa.
Your credentials to the floor of the convention may be missing.
I think you only need three states, so, you know, come on.
4 years ago, we were all surprised by what happened with the Democrats. Right. It's not unreasonable to think that it could happen with the Republicans.
Right, except that it would have to change history, because whoever leads in the Republican primary, Republican polls at the beginning of the election year is always the nominee. But, you know, you've got people there that are like doppelgangers of each other. You know, you've got Perry saying now that Social Security is okay, and over here saying it's unconstitutional and a Ponzi scheme. And you've got Mitt Romney complaining about government health care. Mitt Romney, whatever his name is, complaining about government health care while he enacted it. They can't even decide what they believe in. So it's not surprising people would have trouble making up their minds well past January.
Well, if you examine this a little bit, Mitt Romney's coming here the day after a Florida debate. It's a Friday evening. He's not going to make a lot of news. I'll be there. But he did get it on the calendar.
I think Eric Holcomb has done a smart thing here by introducing all these candidates early, helping them to raise some funds early, giving them exposure early, because Mike is probably right. This is going to go a while. I mean, precedents are made to be broken, Ann, and this may be the year where the Republicans break that streak of the person in the poll in January. As someone who likes to watch politics, I'm all for it. Let's have a good little rumble.
I bet you anything that when Mitt Romney is in Indianapolis tonight that he mentions Mitch Daniels and his book, and I'll probably say good things about
him. What do you think? Under on that?
Really?
Like,
How much you learned?
That would be my guess.
You know, it's interesting too about this primary is that it's unfolding in a textbook fashion in one way, in that we always talk about, and it's conventional wisdom, that during the primary season, people tack to the right if you're in the Republican Party, or to the left if you're in the Democratic Party. And maybe this is that on steroids, because what we've seen is clearly a race to the right.
What's interesting about it is,
because of this clamor and excitement over Mitch Daniels this week, if you look at what he says in the book and you look at some of the comments he made this week in these many interviews, he really is at odds with, in some ways, you mentioned that his willingness to raise taxes, for instance. He was asked if Mitch Daniels, if Barack Obama would have difficulty surviving this primary process.
But if he comes onto a ticket later, it's a different story.
Right, because he was asked, for instance, after the morning after the debate where everybody said that Barack Obama had engaged in socialist policies, and he said, no. That would have gotten him booed off the stage, perhaps, at some of these events.
So you think he's going to provide the adult supervision for whoever the Republican nominee? We've had such good luck with that in the past.
I still think that family considerations will keep him off the ticket. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, will the GOP nomination be settled prior to the Indiana May primary? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, I hope not. Last week's question was, should the candidates for mayor concentrate on issues other than education? 6% said no, it's too important. 78% said yes, it's not the mayor's job. 16% said it's up to them. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Mayor Greg Ballard is standing firm on plans to rename Georgia Street in downtown Indianapolis. The three-block stretch is being reconstructed to accommodate a pedestrian mall, and there is a competition to come up with a new name. A Democratic member of the City County Council, Angela Mansfield, has called for the mayor to drop plans to rename it, but he says that won't happen.
There's other things that were planned for it which was necessitating the name change.
Explain that.
Well, we'll have to wait for the next few days, putting it together to make sure people understand what we've really been trying to do on that street.
I don't think we should change the name, but there are many bigger issues that the mayor ought to be focusing on.
And that's Democratic mayoral candidate Melina Kennedy. John Ketzenberger, is the mayor off base, or are the Democrats scraping for issues?
Well, I think the Democrats perceive that this might be a little wedge that they can hit the mayor with at this time. This issue has generated a surprising amount of interest among people who think that it's silly to rename the street. And they really haven't gotten any guidance from the administration. You know, we saw the mayor there say, you know, this is part of something bigger, but people don't know what that is. And until they get a sense for that, I think they wonder why you need to change the name of the street. And I think that the Democrats see this as a way to say, look, they're not very transparent, and their eye's not on the ball, which is, you know, the real issues of confronting the city.
You know, when you listen to what the mayor has to say, it sounds as if there's some sort of naming rights deal in the works, that there will be revenue. And I think, John, that, hey, look, if why else he's saying, you know, this is part of some bigger thing. If he's going to announce next week, perhaps, that there's $5
million. Selling Georgia?
Well, selling it to something or part of some sponsored and there's several million dollars in revenue, I think then people will say, oh, that was a pretty good deal. But you know why this is going to disappear as an issue anyway? It reminds me of what we saw at the airport a few years ago. You know, we got to keep Weir Cook. We got to keep Weir Cook. Well, there's Weir Cook Terminal at Indianapolis International. There's Branch McCracken Court at Assembly Hall. We're sitting in the Greg Shaheen studio. Thank you for your support, Mr. Shaheen, at WFYI.
I think you should thank Greg's mom.
My point is there's a room, a way to accommodate probably Georgia Street and whatever name, Peyton Place or whatever the mayor wants to come up with.
Meantime, the mayor's race has taken on a little different tone. Greg Ballard started with negative ads today. We got battling poll numbers from both campaigns. Democrats say Melina Kennedy's ahead by a couple. Ballard says he's ahead by 12.
Double digits, yeah.
Yeah. This is going to be a real race between now and Election Day.
But don't you expect to have those kind of battling numbers when you're a month out from the election? I mean, come on. If you're the Democrats and if you are down by double digits, you've got to act like you're not. And I think that's what's going on here. And if you're Ballard and you've got a double-digit lead, you want to hang on to that best you can going into that last month. But I want to answer your question about Georgia Street. This is a great project for potentially some wonderful public space, and there ought to be a different name for the connection between a world-class convention center and a world-class arena like Conseco Fieldhouse. And that's what we're going to have. And to still allow that to be named Georgia Street, we talked about changing the name of the street after Ronald Reagan passed away to do a legacy name. And this idea that we don't change street names, Capitol was Tennessee Street.
Yeah, and Senate was Missouri.
I never heard anybody complaining when they changed Michigan Road to Martin Luther King.
There's a difference here, though. You've got this. you've got those businesses disrupted for the last year, basically, along Georgia Street. We're doing this all for the convention.
This is a permanent change.
But those businesses aren't going to be able to get on MapQuest before the Super Bowl comes, so they're going to get a double whammy from this deal. But to go to your question about the mayor's race, you don't have to look at the dueling poll numbers. You have to look at the fact that now Ballard is attacking, after saying, I'm not a politician, attacking.
But he's been under attack.
He is attacking, as Rex would say, this isn't hypocrisy, it's hypocrisy. He is attacking Melina for a tax increase that he vowed to repeal and didn't do it. And if that isn't hypocrisy, I don't know what is.
She's caught in this one. She's in bad shape on this one.
He's caught in a broken promise.
He could make a better case, couldn't he? I mean, he said he would repeal, and then he got there and he said, well, things would be
different. I'll keep it after all.
True story.
It's hypocrisy.
U.S. Attorney Joe Hogsett announced the indictments of three felons on gun possession charges this week as part of a new cooperative agreement with the Marion County prosecutor, Terry Curry. The news conference to announce those indictments, however, is also part of an effort by Hogsett to raise the profile of the U.S. Attorney's Office. The former politician has conducted a half dozen news conferences this summer in sharp contrast to the low profile maintained by previous U.S. Attorney Susan Brooks.
What has been lost in the past is the important role as a complement to local law enforcement that the United States Attorney's Office can and should be playing.
John Schwanis, is Joe Hogsett seeking to revive his political career?
Well, I mean, you stack up the evidence as you just did, and I think you left one out, didn't you? You reported this week also that the new communications director for the office is the
Thomas
former
Cook, who used to be head of the Democratic Party
in the same position. So, yeah, but maybe so, but so what? I mean, this is a guy who has been in public service. Let's put it this way. If he weren't interested in the public sector and in policy and in continuing his public service in some fashion, I'm guessing he could be making a whole lot more money in some other field of private practice law than he is doing this. So this this tells me, yeah, this is where his interests are, and if he can get back into the game in some fashion, great. And if it scares off criminals in the meantime, which I guess is the stated argument here.
Does that office need a higher profile?
Yes, that office needs a higher profile, and I'm glad he's taking it. And that's not a knock on previous district attorneys. Everybody has their own style, but in this age where there is a lot of angst and anger and uncertainty over fairness and equity and the law, I think it's a good idea to be out front with this. I think you should raise the profile, and I think you should be aggressive with the office.
It's been a springboard for other politicians.
Well, I mean, you have to remember that he's got his start practicing law in what then was McHale, Cook, and Welch. And certainly Governor Welch used the U.S. Attorney's Office as a catapult to other things. And the visibility under Governor Welch was much higher than it has been under recent U.S. attorneys. So it isn't surprising that he'd follow that model.
Susan Brooks was the previous U.S. attorney. She declined comment for the story.
Previous U.S. attorneys have erred on the side of not looking like they're grandstanding. And if you're going to politicize this office, first of all, it's required to be a nonpartisan office.
Yes.
I think it's bad optics to hire the former Democrat State Party communications director to be your communication director if you're the U.S. attorney. I think it sends a bad message. It looks like he's trying to use an East Coast model of using this to profile himself for other offices. And I hate to see that happen because I like Joe Hogsett, and I think he's got a lot of ability, but it sure looks like he's going to play the PR game to the hilt.
The Indiana Supreme Court has issued a new decision in a controversial case involving the rights of police to enter your home. The first ruling in the case prompted lawmakers to stage a hearing in August to hear from people who think the state Supreme Court got it wrong. Richard Barnes was convicted of assaulting a police officer who he thought made an illegal entry into his home. Some people thought the initial ruling made it illegal to resist police under any circumstances. The new ruling recognizes the constitutional protection from unreasonable search and seizure, but upholds a Barnes conviction for assaulting that policeman. Lawmakers who are studying the case praised the ruling.
Well, I think what happens now probably does put more pressure on those in the General Assembly who feel that the decision was wrong to do something.
A lot of people say that judges legislate from the bench, and they're obviously saying that they want the legislature to do its job as well.
State Senator Brent Steele there, preceded by State Senator Tim Lannon and Delaney. Did the Supreme Court get it right this time?
You know, there's always been a constitutional protection against illegal search and seizure. The irony that, you know, there are some legislators talking about the home is the castle, that you have a right to resist law enforcement in an unreasonable or an illegal search and entry. You don't get a determination of what's illegal for years after the event occurred. And I don't know where you draw the line there. Are you allowed, if you think it's illegal, to shoot at a police officer? Are we going to treat police officers like they're criminals coming into the house? You have courts to settle this. If it's illegal and you're charged criminally, then you can have it suppressed.
You're saying they got it right both times?
I'm saying it's both right. and any legislative action on this is, especially from lawyers, lawyers proposing legislative action to have police officers be targets, and they're officers of the court, they ought to all be impeached.
There will be legislative action, I anticipate.
Oh, no question. Absolutely no question. I think Ann raises some legitimate questions about this. But you saw Democrat Tim Lannon, state senator from Anderson.
And a lawyer.
And saw Republican Brent Steele, lawyer from...
He wasn't criticizing the decision,
from, they both said that you're going to see legislation to clarify.
But
they both praised the ruling. But,
right.
But there's language in the ruling that suggests that the legislature has an opening here.
And because you're good, people from both parties saying it, believe me, you're going to have probably half a dozen bills introduced to try to clarify the situation.
So does it get clarified?
I don't know. It's 71 lawmakers who signed on to this letter calling for reconsideration of the earlier decision. I'm guessing that while many of those lawmakers are satisfied with this division of splitting of the baby, not all of them are. So I think it's inevitable we'll see some sort of legislation.
But does it get clarified?
I think that they will make an attempt to clarify it. Whether they do in the end, we'll have to wait and see.
Until the next case arises, and then we'll be back in court again. So.
Finally, so many people have signed up to volunteer at the 2012 Super Bowl here in Indianapolis that thousands may not get the chance to help. 3,000 are on a waiting list. At Conseco Fieldhouse this week, the host committee held a volunteer kickoff party. 13,000 will go through training. The first portion of that training will take place online next month. In December, they'll have job-specific training. Indianapolis native and comedian Mike Epps served as host for the party.
The other cities, they're kind of jaded. They always get something fun. So we're going to do extra, extra, extra here in Indianapolis to make this a great Super Bowl and make sure everybody, all the visitors from all over the world, come here and have a great time.
Mike Epps being serious there. Mike McDaniel, will all those people show up if it's below zero in February?
Absolutely. We have the best base for volunteerism in any place in the country for a big event. It started with the Pan American Games, and it's continued all these years through a variety of events. And people want to be a great host for the Super Bowl. And that's why you're seeing so many volunteers, and we're going to do it better than anybody's ever done it.
3,000 on a waiting list?
Hey, I think that's great. I think Mike's exactly right. It's not often that he is, but he is on this particular occasion. He's right. We're a city that wants to showcase itself, and how better to do that but with the volunteers and the right kind of atmosphere and the right kind of welcoming, and we have a track record on it.
Yes or no? Is Indianapolis's reputation on the line?
Yes.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.